Tuned in to the First Few Moments podcast, a production of EMS Radio. The First Few Moments podcast is the most up-to-date source for responder best practice discussions and incident review. Join industry leaders and seasoned providers at firstfewmoments.com. You can talk to us through Twitter at First Few Moments, email us at podcast@firstfewmoments.com, or call us at 716-245-5FFM. Hello and welcome to the First Few Moments podcast. My name is Kyle David Bates, and you're joining us over here at podcast.firstfewmoments.com, which is, yes, we did move. You know, we were over at firstfewmoments.com. Firstfewmoments.com is still here, and by the way, firstfewmoments.org as well. We also obtained that domain for that because we've done a lot of changes with First Few Moments. If you haven't checked us out, please go over to firstfewmoments.com or .org to see where we've gone. We've gone ahead, and for those of you who aren't aware of what we've done, is we've gone ahead and we've actually incorporated First Few Moments. We have a fantastic board of directors. We've got Ann Montero and Chris Montero. We've got Pat Songer. We've got Lou Romig, Dr. Lou Romig. And we have Wilma Vinton all on our board of directors helping us take First Few Moments to that next level. Just recently, we've gone ahead and we filed for 501c3 status. We're hoping to go nonprofit. And one of the reasons behind that is so that we can get the program, the First Few Moments program, educational program, out to the communities, especially the rural areas. That's really where a lot of our focus is. And we understand there's not a lot of funding out there. So to allow us to travel, to get our staff and our equipment out to do these courses and to expand it, we're hoping to look for some grants, and that was one of the reasons why we went not-for-profit. In addition to that, we have another gentleman who has actually signed on to help us out with our not-for-profit is our new executive director, Mr. Rami Duckworth, who joins us today. Ram, how are you?
Excellent, Kyle. Excellent. And you?
I am fantastic. This is great. It's 2 months in a row, and we've got a podcast.
Sounds good. We got to keep them rolling out.
Absolutely. And folks, we hope you start joining back. We've been having some downloads and keep an eye on it. So spread the word. If you're having issues with iTunes or Stitcher, please go ahead and let me know. So send me an email at kyledavidbates@firstfewmoments.com. And we're going to go ahead and try to fix that. But I think we solved most of those problems with iTunes because the previous podcast, we did have some logistic issues with Apple on that. So I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and we're going to get right into this. And we have a unique topic that's becoming kind of dear to my heart because I've almost been one of these folks. I've had a close call myself. I've had some friends that have been injured from this. And it's the result of roadway incidents and working on them. You know, as everyone knows, one of the major parts of our job is motor vehicle crashes and working up on roadways. And this could be anywhere from, a high-speed, a highway or a throughway to just a backcountry road. The thing is when you're working on that roadway, drivers aren't paying attention. They're not following you on that. And they also come across this. And this is where we end up having issues. This is where we end up having these close calls or, frankly, people being struck. There's numerous people being struck, on this. And it could be anywhere from weather-related to people on unfamiliar roads. So one initiative that we want to go ahead and start with First Few Moments Incorporated, with that, is do you know Tim? And we want everyone to come out saying, yes, I know Tim. And what is Tim? Well, Tim is traffic incident management, and it's how do we manage this roadway? A lot of folks will say, just shut down the road. And that's not always the answer, and that's kind of what we want to talk about tonight, and that's where we're going to be going with the Do You Know Tim initiative on that. We are actually creating a lecture. We'll be in Virginia talking about traffic incident management in November. Rami, I think you're going to be there, right, in Virginia?
Oh, yes, I am. Sorry.
No problem. It's that mute thing. We're all out of practice. So, that's one thing that we're looking at. So, the one part that we've actually kind of gone ahead and gotten involved in is there's something out there called the TIM Network. And that is something that is an organization at timnetwork.org that takes multiple folks from different specialties and coming together and looking at how we can improve traffic incident management. And we actually have a gentleman on with us tonight. We're going to be talking about him. We're going to be talking about the TIM Network. But in addition, we also have some other folks on our panel. So before I introduce Eric, Doug Godomsky, how are you tonight?
Doing great, and greetings, everyone, from, sunny New Mexico. And being springtime here, it's a rare day because the wind's not blowing, so I'm happy.
Hey, Doug, just because it's been a little bit of time, can you give our listeners a little bit of background of yourself and where you are?
All right. Well, I'm a full-time educator at the University of New Mexico for the Department of Emergency Medicine, EMS Academy. And my primary job is actually to teach a paramedic course online. So you can think of it in a lot of ways as a flipped classroom, but yeah, the didactic part is online, and they do lab hours every week out at branch campuses. So minimizes the amount of travel any students have to do, and so far so good.
Excellent. Doug, are you aware of anyone in your area in terms of traffic incident management or being struck? Do they do it, or they just kind of say, we're on the road and watch out for us?
I'd have to go with the latter part of that. I know it's something that, well, at least when I was in the streets full time, something that was always on my mind. I worried about the color of the clothing I wore, where my rig was at a scene, who we were there with, all that stuff. And I can think of a number of incidents where emergency vehicles were struck out on the highway by, well, unfortunately, mostly drunk drivers, but, yeah, inattentive drivers as well, even texting and driving, yeah.
A lot of that. Excellent. Well, welcome, Doug. Thank you for joining us.
All right.
Our next member of our panel tonight deals a lot with driving and driving safety. He's been on the podcast before, Mr. Rob Rahab. Rob, how are you tonight?
Good, Kyle. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are things? And let's just go ahead and remind folks about you and where you're coming from.
Sure. I'm retired from the New York City Fire Department, EMS. I was a paramedic lieutenant there for 27 years. The last few years I was spent as the officer in charge of our driver training program, our EVOC program. And we had a great success rate in which we reduced intersection collisions by 50% after instituting new training materials. And after I retired, I'm working as a consultant now for FAC Incorporated, which builds driver training simulators, and we do curriculum development and training for EMS and fire, and actually all aspects, but I do fire and EMS, in driver training and driver safety and awareness.
So one thing that we do when we start talking about traffic incident management, I know there is some part in EVOC about vehicle positioning on that. What have you seen in terms of traffic incident management? And especially, I guess, with FDNY and out in the urban areas, you may not have it as much.
No, actually we do. We have quite a few highways and the urban congestion, sometimes you think of rural roads sometimes being more dangerous, and maybe in a way they are, but, because of the crowded urban environment, you have all these people who are always in a hurry and trying to get someplace, and as far as they're concerned, when they see a collision on the side of the road or in the middle of whatever, they don't look at it like, oh my goodness, what's happened, and let me take a look. They look at it as, here's another delay in my very busy schedule. So a lot of times they're not very happy with it. And we've actually gotten to the point in our TIMS, in our traffic management system, that we teach specifically how many lanes of traffic to shut down depending on traffic flow and conditions, both weather and traffic conditions, and so on. Because we've learned that too much traffic, closing down too many lanes could actually aggravate people that we've had it where they've actually purposely tried to strike us. And, and then you have to be on the flip side of that not shutting down enough traffic is not really protecting the scene either.
Yeah, that's always, especially out your way. People are a little bit nicer here in the Buffalo area, but, a little bit. Excellent. So welcome back, Rob. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And my last guest is Eric Rensel from the TIM Network. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kyle. Thanks for having me today. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're absolutely, we're glad that you can join us, and we really are appreciative of the partnership that we're starting to create with the TIM Network in the First Few Moments.
Well, I think just like the principles that are taught in traffic incident management, forming relationships that allow people to learn from one another and exchange best practices are absolutely critical to not only improving responder safety, but ensuring that everybody goes home every time. And also, as a last guest panelist mentioned, is, you know, getting people where they want to go as quickly as possible. So I think I'm glad to be extending this partnership, and hopefully it's the beginning of a lot more collaboration.
Absolutely. Eric, can you go ahead and just, because I'll be honest, you know, I wasn't really familiar with the TIM Network until about a year ago. I started, you know, I became a member of it and reading some of the information put out. But can you give us a background of the TIM Network and TIMNetwork.org?
Sure. So back in about 2005, 2006 time frame, there was a contingent of officials from the U.S. that took a scanning tour of Europe trying to look at how to improve safety on U.S. highways without building additional infrastructure. And one of the emphasis areas that had come out was dealing with traffic incident management. So when the group returned, they formed what became the National Traffic Incident Management Coalition. And one of the main chief things that the coalition did at first is they developed and released the National Unified Goal for Traffic Incident Management. Is that something that most of your listeners would be familiar with, Kyle?
Probably not.
Yeah, so the NUG, as it's affectionately known, really consists of three things. First, it's responder safety. Second is safe, quick clearance. And third is interoperable communications. And so they kind of established 18 strategies for a strategic plan, if you will, about implementing the NUG across the United States. And so that happened in 2007. And so they put together a strategic plan for their own coalition that would address how to implement the NUG across the U.S. And one of the things from the strategic plan was the creation of a nationwide network for like-minded individuals and practicing traffic incident management professionals of all disciplines to be able to access and take advantage of, so that they could connect with others, they could find best practice information, and really start to try to drive the discipline, if you will, the multi-agency discipline of traffic incident management forward across the nation.
Now, who makes up the coalition? Is it firefighters, paramedics? Is it beyond EMS and fire?
So the National Traffic Incident Management Coalition was purposely built as a multidisciplinary group. So you have transportation agency sector people involved from AASHTO, the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. People from the Federal Highway Administration are involved. From a fire perspective, the Emergency Responder Safety Institute at ResponderSafety.com is a founding member of the coalition, in addition to involvement from U.S. Fire Administration. On the EMS side, a heavy involvement from NASEMSO, the National Association of EMS Officials, as well as a couple of other EMS groups. And then on the law enforcement side, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and about probably 20 other organizations. But the point is that from its initial foundation, even at a national level, there was a strong emphasis on the multidisciplinary development of it, because we realized that, you know, at the scene of a crash, there are a lot of things happening, obviously, and a lot of different agencies that have to interact, and a lot of things that need to go right in a very short time frame if we are to improve, you know, the overall safety on the highway, as well as the responders that are at the scene.
Now, I'll open this up to the other members of the panel. What do you guys know about the TEM network? Have you guys heard about traffic incident management, or where does it stand in your area?
So I have heard of the TIMS management system. I teach a lot of its material in my classes. I'm a big believer in it. But I think what I've been seeing, and maybe it's not really statistically based, but just my own observation, is that when I'm driving by and I see other units doing team management, you don't always see it done properly. I think the message and the information that TIMS and what Mike and everybody there is doing is a great job, but I don't think we're getting the information out to the first responders, especially in the volunteer companies, as readily as we should. I don't think there's enough emphasis on it in training, just like there isn't enough emphasis in driver training.
I think you're right, and, you know, one of the things that, you know, is kind of going on out there is, and I'm an engineer, so I'm not, you know, I don't have the first responder training like all of you have, although I've been fortunate enough to travel all over the world and speak with first responders, so, you know, I at least, I think, understand, and I think, you know, as first responders, you're trained to rush to the scene and give aid. In many cases, with disregard for your own safety. And I think that mentality is something that is cultural and, you know, is not going to change overnight. But obviously, with the amount of responders that are struck by cars and nearly struck by cars, the near-miss type events on an annual basis, you know, I think taking a look at improving responder safety, looking at how we set up the scene, looking at how we're dressed, looking at how we interact with one another while we're there. And, oh, by the way, the cars that are backing up at the end of the queue that's approaching there, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Rami, in your travels and your teachings and working as a paramedic and firefighter, Eric brought up a really interesting aspect in terms of the culture. What have you seen in your experience with that?
Well, as linked to what Rob was saying, I think that there's a knowledge that there's additional information out there, but that maybe it's not applicable to the individual services, or, you know, that's the kind of thing that the fire police worry about, or if I'm wearing a vest, that's going to create a magical safety zone around me through which nothing can approach or injure me. I think when I learned more about the TIM network and the resources that they made available, initially through you, Kyle, I realized how many resources, how many simple things that we could change about what we do would make things dramatically safer for any traffic incident that we're involved in. And like Rob was saying, it really upsets me a little bit now, realizing how ignorant I was about this kind of stuff, and that there's no kind of magical stuff that you have to worry about. It's just simple things. There are really a lot of simple things we could do to make ourselves a lot safer.
But have you seen anyone that's gone through the training or learned about it and gone, nah, we don't need that, we're just going to shut the road down? Or is it just a lack of education, you think?
In my personal experience and opinion, it's a lack of access to the information. I haven't seen anybody gain access to this information, see some of the techniques that Tim promotes and the resources that they talk about, and then go, nah, we don't really need that. Again, I'm sure it's out there. You deal with that in any class that you teach. There's always going to be somebody who's going to say, we don't need any of that stuff. But the way we've done it for years has worked fine, and I personally have never experienced getting run over by somebody, so that must mean that it never ever happens.
It's the other guy.
Right, exactly.
Now, Doug, go ahead, Rob.
No, Kyle, I just wanted to also just mention on what Ronnie was saying, was that I've never experienced somebody who's turned it down. I think a lot of the stuff that's going out on the streets is due to ignorance or a lack of training. They're not given the information. Once the information is presented, I can't tell you how many people have come up to me after a class and said, you know, I was walking in not expecting to learn anything, and I cannot believe how all these little simple things that we're not doing can literally protect us in such a large scale manner. And that one of them are going back and changing the policy and the culture and the way they're doing it. But the problem is that we're not getting it out there in big numbers. We're hitting it in drips and drabs. And that's one of the issues that we seem to be coming across.
You guys are probably familiar. You know, about a year ago, the Federal Highway Administration started delivering national responder training, the trainer courses across the U.S., and they've established a goal of trying to train 1 million responders through their program. Are you guys familiar with the training that's come out from the Federal Highway Administration?
Vaguely.
Yeah,
No.
Yeah, so there's an 8-hour train the trainer course that's available where Federal Highway Administration will come out, work with your areas to put together a class of between probably 30 and 40 folks. And they'll spend 12 hours, training trainers in multidisciplinary approach to traffic incident management. And then from there, they provide access to centralized materials that are maintained by an outside contractor that you as instructors can log on and get to use to deliver a 4-hour training version in the area wherever you'd like to. And they are probably, I'm not sure what the latest count on numbers is, but I know it's probably getting up to closer to the 100,000 range, most likely. I think they've been in 44 states at this point or something like that.
Now, Eric, are they tracking how many classes people do beyond the train-a-trainer?
You know, that's one of the things, Kyle. They do ask the instructors to enter the number of people that they've trained after the train-the-trainer program. But quite honestly, that's a place where, you know, they could use some help. And I think that goes along with the cultural change that I was talking about earlier. You know, while it would be nice if every single person out there was, you know, their name and email and contact information was captured, you know, that's maybe not feasible if you're trying to train 1 million people. But it is helpful. It is available for the people that take the train-the-trainer class and then want to deliver that in their local areas.
Because one thing I've noticed sometimes with these train-the-trainer classes, and not just with this one, but just overall, but with these topics that are, I don't want to say that are out there, but are on the edge of I don't want to say for lack of being a cool topic, you know. I mean, if you,
sure,
you know, if you want to talk about, you know, tactical paramedics and, you know, trauma care, you will fill a room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you start talking about this stuff, this is actually more important than any of it because this is something that we deal with every day. But the problem is I found with these train-the-trainer courses is people go to it, go, yeah, that's kind of cool, and then you never go anywhere with that.
Yeah, it's a little right. Tough. I mean, the only thing that's hard is there's no additional funding. So it takes a really dedicated volunteer that goes to the train-the-trainer class and then feels passionate enough about the topic to assemble a class and teach the class. And that's quite honestly where local agencies, where, you know, fire academies, EMS departments, and, you know, things like that can really help fill that void in the local areas.
So let me shoot this over to Doug, who is our resident educator today. We're all educators, you know, but, you know, with Doug over there working full-time as an educator and teaching programs, especially the online stuff. Doug, you know, let's look at just the national standards in terms of education, you know, for those who don't play the home game, you know, basically the national curricula, which has now become national educational standards. How much time is spent on dealing with traffic incident management?
I can probably honestly say not a lot when you look at it. Well, how many pages are devoted to that in a typical textbook? And it's not a lot. I tend to have a bias of my own and just intentionally include more than that in the courses I teach. But that's me. And when I look at stuff like this around the state, I see some great examples of, well, and it seems volunteers are the most progressive in that regard, but, you know, they're just out just sponges for information, always looking for a way to do it better and safer, and devote tremendous amounts of, at least of their own time, if not money, to making things better. Interestingly, where I see the people unwilling to budge, you know, it's kind of the this is my territory, you're not going to tell me how to run it sort of deal, are the full-time paid guys that have been there forever and, you know, this is the way we've always done it, so why should I change it? If it ain't broke, I ain't going to fix it. And I don't know how many times I've heard that, and it kind of drives me crazy. I don't know, maybe I'm odd, but I've got that attitude that, you know, we can always do it better. We don't need to jump on every bandwagon, but we should give them all a good look over to decide which one is really worth getting on. I was really pleased to say, you know, to notice as I was looking things up here that, gosh, next week we're offering two Tim Train the Trainer courses right here in our state in different cities. So, it's headed in the right direction, at least as far as I'm concerned. And I certainly wish more people would more willingly adopt these kind of things to do it better. Unfortunately, I think many of them look at it as, what do you mean? I got to go to another training? Of course, that kind of surprises me, too, on how many students think that the day they graduate is as smart as they need to be, which is, of course, you know, totally wrong.
You know, and I think the other thing is that we look at, and we start getting into the affective domain and trying people, you know, appreciate what they're learning. And I think one of the misconceptions is when you look at the numbers of firefighters, you know, fatalities, and from, you know, from 1996 to 2010, there are only 70 firefighters. I shouldn't say only, you know, that's 70, you know, that's one too many, firefighters that were killed as a result of being struck by a motor vehicle, at a scene. And folks, what you have to remember is those are firefighters. You know, the problem is when we get into EMS, is there's not good injury tracking. You know, they're working on that with, please help me. I'll find out. There's actually a website now where we can go ahead and put in incidents in there. Because the problem is that there's not good tracking for non-fire, non-law enforcement personnel on that. Because where do we stand? Are we a fire-based paramedic? Okay, that goes into the fire side. Are we a commercial service or a third service? That may not fall into any of that. And that's the one problem that we're having. So the numbers that you see may be deceptively wrong. Eric, I'm going to kind of have you shoot off the hip on this, but, you know, what numbers are we looking at in terms of just anybody being struck, even construction workers?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, Kyle, because I've felt for a while now, and I've been involved with traffic incident management for about 6 years, and I've consistently felt like EMS was an underrepresented group in the TIM discussion. You know, we talk a lot about firefighters parking their vehicle correctly at the scene. We talk a lot about law enforcement and fire getting along at the scene, but nobody, to my knowledge, spends a consistent amount of time talking about the EMS role at the scene. But to answer your question directly, we publish at the TIM Network, we publish a monthly newsletter called The Responder, and every month in the newsletter, we have a gentleman that writes a column for us, Eric Reddick from the Newport News area, and we publish the amount of responders that, as far as we can find, from each discipline that are struck by incidents. And one of the things that we find is probably the most vulnerable group are towing and recovery providers, because a lot of times if there are not good policies in place for the areas that they serve, you know, they can wind up being out there on the highway by themselves. And that's something that's very concerning. And, you know, they talk a lot about that in the towing and recovery industry for sure. I'm looking up here. If you give me just a minute, I can probably find the stats for year-to-date
of where we're at here.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Ram?
Yes.
What have you seen out there in terms of how people, you know, relate to this?
How the civilian population relates to us?
Yeah, most of the times that I've always dealt with, and from what I've seen from around the country, traveling quite a bit, is that I've always seen that the majority of the motorists are respectful and they do give us some leeway and try to do the right thing. I think where we come into play, which is the dangerous portion, I mean, because if it was 100% like that, then I really don't think we'd be talking right now about this, having a discussion about the fatalities that we have. I think the where it comes from is two sets of individuals. One, the distracted, inattentive driver who is so engrossed in trying to get a glimpse of the horrific event taking place in front of them and not paying attention to the responders around them. To the motorist who is, like I said before, in too much of a hurry and you're just another obstacle in their way. And they're just trying to speed through, and they're going to take that shortcut. Like the guy that you see who crosses over behind the barrels of a shutdown roadway, you know, or a shutdown lane on a highway, and decides to eat everybody else out of the way and, you know, get ahead of them. The third aspect that I've seen is the responders themselves. Unfortunately, and again, thank God it's not often, but we don't block the incident scene properly. I was just on a collision just a few days ago on a motorcycle collision. A guy dumped his bike, and we were the first ones on scene, positioned our vehicle properly, and PD shows up and starts blocking some traffic, and then the fire department shows up. The engine company shows up, and we are in the left lane of the traffic near the center divider, and the fire truck parks on the shoulder all the way across the way. And the guys are actually walking back and forth across a lane of traffic that is actually being moved. And all the traffic was diverted to that right lane. And I'm just looking at this in amazement as to why they're actually putting themselves in jeopardy by having to cross a busy lane of traffic versus just positioning their vehicle differently, you know, to protect the scene. So when you have a combination of those three events, or those three individuals, categories, that's where you wind up with having a greater chance of having a responder struck and either killed or maimed.
Rob, if I could jump in there. First of all, I was able to get the stats, and as of December, the beginning of December of 2013, we had about 100 police officers, 100 firefighters that were struck. EMS was at almost 25, and towers were almost at 25. So about 230 first responders of those four groups that were struck on the highway last year. And, you know, there's many more that are in a near-miss situation, kind of like you were describing, Rob. And, you know, a good friend of mine, Tom Martin, who used to be with the I-95 Corridor Coalition, he described it as the D drivers. You know, you've got the drunk drivers, you've got
distracted drivers?
Yeah, the distracted drivers. You've got the drivers that are on, you know, some sort of prescription medication or illegal drugs.
The drugged-up drivers?
Drug, thank you very much. And then finally, you've got the just plain dumb drivers out there, too. You know, you got a lot of missiles coming at you while you're out there trying to do your job.
Right.
Now, it's very interesting. I don't know if this is an issue with tracking. By the way, the website for the near miss is, it's called Event, you know, on the EMS voluntary event notification tool. And it allows responders, just the boots on the ground responder, to post anonymous events. So they're trying to track a lot of these issues that are out there, and there's different aspects. And I'll put the link up onto the website, as well as the information that Eric has supplied. I'll be putting that up on the website as well for the podcast. So if you're listening to this, you know, go over to the website, podcast.firstfewmoments.org, and, you know, check that out. But I'm just going to throw this out to, you know, to the general population here. You know, Eric, please feel free, you know, on this. But it's almost three times the amount of firefighters and police officers that are struck than EMS. You think that's an issue with tracking, or you think there's something else going on?
I personally think that it's a case of, you know, firefighters are typically going to be at the scene first. You know, they're going to be out there putting down the traffic control. excuse me, and you know, their exposure might be greater than for the EMS and the tower folks at some times.
Rami, what's your feeling?
Well, that was that was going to be my guess, is that the police officers and firefighters would be probably more commonly walking out of a safe zone in the controlled traffic area, whereas the EMS providers would be more likely to get in, get done what they need to get done, and then get out.
Because, I mean, that number, that's a huge difference. Right. Numbers on there. Go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, I mean, the police, you know, don't forget that when we're looking at the number of police officers that are struck at these incidences, I mean, this is also including traffic stops. Is that correct, Doug?
Or Eric?
Most, you know, while there is no national standard for this type of reporting, most of these are sifted through, and they are occurring where it's at an active incident scene. I'm not going to tell you for sure there's none represented in that number, because the fact is we don't have consistent reporting across the nation. But
right.
Many of these that I'm aware of are at active incident scenes.
Okay. All right. So this isn't including a car stop.
Not typically, although, like I said, I'm not going to say there are none in there.
Right, right, of course. All right, well, that's an interesting point on that, because then I'm sure the number of police officers being struck would probably almost be doubled if we included the car stops as well.
Well, I would argue this too, Rob. I think you're right, and I think that the fact that we don't have a nationwide reporting structure for these type of events tells me that the group is probably underrepresented as a whole. I'll tell you that in some states, where there's an incident like this, there's an incident where responders are struck, some crash reporting forms don't include a way to categorize these. So when if there's a, like, for instance, if there's a firefighter or an EMS person that's struck at the scene, and the investigating officer comes to investigate that, it may be recorded as a pedestrian accident on a freeway.
Right. Right. Yeah, that was a problem that we've always had with when it comes to reporting any type of vehicle incident with first responders. Well, you know, it's an interesting take on that.
So I think what we can pretty much say is, in terms of, you know, we spent the last about 30 minutes here saying people are getting hit and we need to do something. You know, there is the education that's out there, but it seems like it's not getting down to the boots on the ground people, whether, you know, educationally or, you know, affectively, you know, aspect. But we need to start looking at something. Now, when we teach the First Few Moments program, and we do have sections on traffic incident management within the program, one of the most common cures, one of the common fixes to traffic incident management that I hear from a lot of the rural folks is, well, we're going to close the road, because that will prevent any vehicles from coming through, and our providers are safe then. Is this a fallacy? Is this truth? You know, is that good practice? What are we looking at with that?
I'll tell you, that never happens in Jersey.
I'll tell you this.
State trooper will not let you shut down the road.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, Kyle. I think from what I've seen, you know, that definitely is maybe the old way of thinking. I know ResponderSafety.com has worked hard on really introducing the idea of the lane plus one concept, you know, where you take the lane where the incident has occurred plus one more. And in some cases, it does result in a full closure. And while there's no hard evidence to this, anecdotally, I've heard people talk about the fact that it actually creates a more dangerous scene. And I'll tell you where the most danger can occur. Secondary crashes are really becoming a plague of the U.S. interstate highway system. And I'm talking about the incident that once a primary crash has occurred and there are responders on scene to that or on their way to the scene, a crash that occurs at the end of the queue of the vehicles approaching that crash, or even the queue of vehicles approaching from the opposite direction that are, you know, rubbernecking and checking out the incident. Those accidents, those secondary crashes, have the tendency to be more severe, and oftentimes they become they're more likely to be fatal. And especially as you get into rural areas, this becomes a real public safety hazard, because in most cases you're dealing with volunteer organizations, and the backup crew, they could be 45 minutes away before they can get there. And so secondary crashes are a real emphasis point when you have to talk about traffic incident management.
Eric, and you said one thing in there that kind of, you know, sticks out in my head, is especially about the rural areas, you know, and in their crashes. And a lot of what I see in terms of photographs and people talking about traffic incident management and examples, a lot of that's done on highways. A lot of those done on multi-lane highways. I know a lot of it has to do with Cumberland, you know, the Cumberland area, because they've been really proponents on this and helping devise the United States Fire Administration's traffic incident management manual that's out there. That's FA-330, which is the newest version of March 2012. So you see a lot of that in terms of the highways, but it seems like we kind of forget about the rural areas and the back roads for those.
Well, you're right, Kyle. I mean, early on, a lot of the focus was on the nation's most congested highways, you know, around the urban areas. And, you know, really, if you put the responder safety side aspect aside for just a minute, next you're talking about economic impact, you know, and when a crash that closes the road for, say, 30 minutes occurs in an urban area during a rush hour, there's a tremendous impact to society in terms of lost productivity, lost time, impacts to the freight network as well. And so, you know, early on, you would see a lot of focus about the most congested areas in the U.S. Being emphasis points for traffic incident management. And that certainly continues. But more and more now, you're seeing that traffic incident management is just as much of an emphasis in rural areas. And even though the topic or the circumstances might be somewhat different, you know, you're not dealing with that big rush hour traffic like you probably have in Buffalo, but you are dealing with areas where, like I mentioned before, it's primarily a volunteer workforce. It's folks that, you know, could be an hour away for response at times, limited cell phone coverage. And, you know, I'm sure you guys are very familiar with the golden rule. Well, maybe that too, but also the golden hour. And probably not in Jersey. They're probably not familiar with the golden rule. But anyways, that's for a different podcast, I think. The golden hour, you know, is critically important in your line of work with EMS. And you definitely find that trauma rates, fatalities due to trauma, increase in rural areas when, you know, the patients can't get timely access to care. I'm sure you guys can comment way more on that than I can.
Well, you're right. It's absolutely. I mean, you have the golden hour that you have to get those patients out there and to care. But before any of that actually takes place, it's really all about the responder safety, because if we just increase the number of injuries because one of our guys gets hit, you know, that whole thing shifts from the original patient to one of our own.
So, you know, it's paramount that we have that. As far as shutting the highway down, you know, you guys talk in the Infinity section, you know, the golden hour as well, or the platinum 10 minutes for traffic, diversions. That what is it that they say? For every minute you shut the highway down, you build traffic up 1 mile. I guess that's from the urban area. So, you know, usually the interoperability between fire, EMS, and police become a big issue because everybody's got their different roles and they have to maintain their own operation. So, you know, EMS is trying to take care of the patient, fire department's trying to do a washdown or vehicle extrication, and the police are trying to not only maintain a safe area but keep traffic flowing so that, like you said, we don't have an interruption in commerce. So,
right. The rule of thumb to help you a little bit is for every minute of the traffic lane is blocked by an incident, it results in 4 minutes of congestion. And I was introduced to the traffic incident management when I was up in Holden, Maine, which is a very, very small town. We had 20 personnel in our department. Small town between Bangor and Bar Harbor. Well, if any of you travel down to Bar Harbor, well, you probably went through Bangor down on you went up 95, and then you may have gone down 1A. And that is a very busy road by their standards, a very busy road. You get a lot of people from out of state who aren't familiar with the roads, which is one of the common causes of motor vehicle collisions in the rural areas. And they, you know, they hit deer, they hit moose, they hit another car, they're not paying attention. What would happen is if we shut that road down, we would back up traffic for miles, and it would cause secondary and tertiary collisions. So we actually established a traffic incident management area on that. If you didn't know it was an accident, you thought you were coming up to a construction scene. That was our goal for that, because we need to keep that traffic moving there. And now the one thing is with that is we were able to do that because, folks, it is equipment intensive. Establishing, you know, a proper traffic incident management area is very equipment intensive. You know, you've got numerous cones, you've got, you know, flagging, you know, signs for flagging, you should have advanced warning signs, you know, these big bright pink 48-inch by 48-inch, you know, warning signs that say accident ahead. This is really the proper way to establish a traffic incident, to deal with traffic incident management. But it's very costly. And in Maine, we only got ours through grants on that. And I mean, there's specifics, you know, the manual and uniform traffic control devices. Did I say that right, Eric? The MUTCD,
mm-hmm.
You know, will actually specifies, you know, the height of the cone, you know, and the reflective on that for safety. And it's expensive. And I think that's one of the issues beyond just the education issue. But, you know, how do some of these small departments afford this? How can they be able to fund this equipment?
Well, and even to take that a step farther, Kyle, I mean, if you look at the business of running a local fire company or a local, you know, EMS response company, there's also the liability implications of having those standards just be out there. And I've heard opponents and proponents of the MUTCD and other publications that attempt to establish standards for this type of work, because while everybody agrees that more training is definitely worthwhile, more awareness is good, to actually have the standards in place opens up a liability concern for a lot of these, especially the local rural, you know, type of agencies that really can't afford or have the resources to know about all of these things that are out there.
Are you aware of any funding or any grants that are out there at the federal level?
As far as
obtaining equipment.
You know, there are various programs. The most I've seen are the ones that come from the Department of Homeland Security. A lot of times there are preparedness grants like that. There are companies that you can hire that will help, you know, your agency find grant opportunities, and you can certainly hire grant writers. I don't personally have a lot of anecdotes where people have been successful with those, though.
Yeah, the one that we up in Maine, we actually got us through a grant, I believe it's through National Flare Academy. Rom, can you help out with that? Are you familiar with any of that?
I'm sorry, who?
Rami.
Sorry, no, I'm not familiar with the with those programs specifically. No.
I would think that the assistance of firefighter grant would be able to help them along with that in getting equipment and I believe even some of the training involved for Fort Sims and along with anything else when it comes to incident management. I know that the big problem though is not so much for the fire department, it's for EMS. I mean the fire department has the AFG grants, and the police have grants through ILETA, and they also get a lot of seizure money and things like that from the seizure assets that they do. But EMS really doesn't have much of anything. And I think that's our big problem right there, is that the grant money and the federal money isn't being divided up equally.
Do you think it's I have a question for you, Rob. Do you think it's because the money, any kind of grant money like that, is diverted to patient care focus and not necessarily responder safety focus?
That's probably part of it, but I think one of the bigger problems, like what Kyle had mentioned earlier, was that where does EMS stand? We are kind of like, We're the stepchildren almost of everything because, are we fire based? There are a few EMS systems out there that are police based, yet the police organizations don't recognize them, just like in some cases fire organizations don't recognize EMS. And then you're dealing with municipal, private, hospital, and commercial and volunteer based ambulance services that are not affiliated with anybody. And they're not allowed to apply for the AFG grants or police seizure monies or anything like that. So where do they go? They have nothing. And that's one of the big issues that's out there because although the training's available for them, how do they fund that training? How do they fund the equipment?
You know, one of the things that we've been examining at the TIM Network now, ever since a workshop that was held back in the wintertime, are what we're calling some next-generation traffic incident management issues. And one of the interesting ones that's been developing is the potential role that the insurance industry could play in really helping to promote and implement traffic incident management. You know, from a non-educated standpoint, it stands to reason to me that it would be in an insurance company's best interest to promote traffic incident management and promote the training and all of the things that go along with it, because in the long run, you would think it would help them pay out less claims.
I think that's an excellent point. I think that's a huge point that we need to start looking at. Both, I mean, the vehicle, insurance company, but also, workman's comp and a lot of those other companies, too, with that. Rob, I think one of the issues that we have in terms of EMS is we don't have the vehicles to carry the equipment. We can't put, and that's one thing that also happens with, the fire side is, where are you going to put all these cones? I mean, it's a lot of cones, and these signs aren't tiny. So, where are you going to put them? So I think that's one of the things that we have to look at. And the other thing is working with law enforcement, Rob, I think you were saying in terms of they don't like, see, police don't like the road to be shut down, and we know why. I mean, we know why. I mean, there's going to be times that you have to shut a road down. It could be anywhere from a fatal accident that needs investigation to, landing a helicopter in the roadway. And I think everyone will appreciate that, especially if it's going to be an accident scene investigation. We shut down a four-lane highway here not about a year ago when a kid stepped into the front of a tractor trailer and got smashed, by him. And we had all – there was stuff all over – there's evidence all over, three lanes of major highway that we had to shut down. And the problem is when you shut down a road like that, you start taking, we had these huge tractor trailers. They're now leaving an interstate and we're putting them onto, town roads, which A, aren't really rated for that weight of some of these vehicles, but B, we're not sure what some of these vehicles are holding. Some of these vehicles are hazardous materials and they're going through residential areas. And these are things you have to think about when you are shutting a road down. In addition to, they don't know that area. So they don't know that area. they're distracted, and there's a potential for additional accidents.
Yes. That's a good point.
Absolutely. There are all these secondary concerns that a lot of people don't realize.
You know, and I think this is what we all have to look at is in terms of, you know, again, we had to shut it down. We didn't have a choice, you know, that was, but as soon as we could, you know, open at least one lane, you know, we opened that lane, you know, for that. But you need to be able to work with law enforcement. We're in a very unique position where I am because as EMS, we're actually part of the police department and we can work together in terms of clearing roadways. And you've heard me talk before about safety. Where in the wintertime up on our expressway it gets really icy is that we don't even send an ambulance up there. If the person can walk, isn't majorly injured, they get in the back of a police car and they bring them off the highway for us. You know, so that is one thing that, you know, that we look at doing. But having that partnership, and Pat Songer out in Humboldt General Hospital, he had Nicole Mayer write an article for the Responder for the TIM Network here in April, and it was an excellent article. And they took and they have a solution to that problem. What they actually will do is police establish a traffic incident management upon arrival to the to the crash scene. EMS, Humboldt General Hospital, who also basically does rescue and extrication as well, they deal with that. When they're done, they understand that law enforcement now has a job to do. They need to start the investigation. They switch roles. So the paramedics and the personnel go from a patient care issue, which, you know, stands rescue, which has been, you know, mitigated, and they go over into the aspect of managing the traffic scene.
Interesting. Do you see, is that unique to your area, or is that something that happens more readily that we just don't know about?
Well, that's out in Winnemucca, Nevada. So, you know, that's out that way. And that's one of the most unique situations that, you know, that I've heard of. So that's kind of neat. Rami, how do you guys deal with traffic incident management?
Well, we just recently in our area had a chief and actually a couple of chiefs in the surrounding area who were very supportive of it. We were able to get a lot of resources in terms of equipment and materials, and calling in people are devoting rescuers on scene. So that was great. And we've been talking about that for a while. But in terms of training, we didn't really get the training, and there wasn't the buy-in from the personnel at the time. And there still isn't. Our chief and a lot of the chiefs from the surrounding areas were very familiar with personal incidents where vehicles and people had been struck that they had experienced directly, and then they moved into the area where I'm working, and again, the individual responders were not as familiar with that. We hadn't had an incident in our area. So, again, we had a lot of the resources devoted, but things kind of fell off when they came to getting us the training just because people hadn't experienced it, and we weren't searching out for it. We weren't looking for it. So I think that was a big problem and a big part of it. Like I say, that was years ago now, and I wasn't familiar with, as we said, a lot of the resources that the TIM Network has put out there, and so many of the things that we've mentioned today on this podcast. I think just raising the awareness, which obviously we're trying to do with this podcast, and I hope any of the listeners will be happy to share some of these resources. That's you know, it's informational resources. Certainly we need the equipment resources, and we need the personnel resources, but I think you need to start with the information resources, and everything else has to build out from there.
Doug, what do you feel in terms of a lot of this? And how can we get it out there?
Good question. I certainly think it's a fallacy that closing the highway is going to make you safer. I've way too often seen the, we'll say, aggravated driver just whip right around and, you know, drive down the shoulder or whatever. Had one guy, I think in a large, you know, box delivery truck do that one time and try to drive under the turning rotors of our helicopter. It's a challenge.
I actually had a volunteer firefighter drive under my rotors going to a crash scene. We're like, excuse me.
Yeah, of course, that antenna is sticking up everywhere and all that too. But nonetheless, I really like locally, we've got some, well, great resources, but even so, they're fairly limited. We've got these, they call them like help trucks, but they're essentially a highway assistance vehicle. So even if you just break down whatever, you know, they've got the huge, I don't know, air or water filled bumper on the back. They've got the big sign that flips up, you know, and with the directional arrows and all kinds of emergency lighting. They're great. And when there's a fairly major incident on the interstates, they'll have two or three of these things out there helping to control traffic. They'll get their cones out and all of that. But that's only during rush hour. So what goes on when this incident happens in any other hour but those few during the day or in the middle of the night? It's still a problem. So that brings up the Olcrate, who's covering this, who provides this. Can we even come close to equating this at 3 in the morning when we've got limited sort of resources out there to deal with this? Of course, we're also dealing with less traffic at that hour, so that's a big factor to going with this, you know. And I was going to say a while back when we were talking about things, if I was going to design a study and I wanted to know about, you know, number of responders that were unfortunately killed at scenes, I'd want to know all kinds of stuff, like where the first ones on the scene where there was little or no traffic control yet. Is the disparity here just because the number of firefighters and police officers often way outweighs, you know, in sheer numbers, the number of EMS responders? Is that alone explain this? You know, where were they on the scene? Were they way back where the traffic's piling up, or were they out, you know, closer to the accident itself where all the people driving by were totally fixated on that crunched vehicle and not paying attention to what was in front of them? So I don't know. There's a lot of variables there that we'd have to look at. But I don't know. Somewhere in here, we've got to account for this. We've got to make things safer. We've got to do – well, you could say we've got to do more training. But, you know, from getting back to the educator point of view, we've got to devote more than that six paragraphs in the book to this. It really is. And part of the educational crunch is – I have got so much to cover. How do I do this in the allotted time? And in some ways, it gets down to priorities. But yeah, I still don't think we spend enough.
I definitely agree with you, Doug. And folks, hey, we're coming up on just about an hour now for the, you know, the podcast, and you know, this discussion is not done. You know, I think we talked a lot about today about, you know, appreciation, you know, and knowledge, you know, and the knowledge that we lack in terms of traffic incident management. And I think this will be, you know, a similar series that we've done on other topics that we're going to continue with, because this is such an important thing. And the knowledge is just not out there. And I think this is a good start for that. So, you know, before we sign off here, you know, I just want to thank my panel for joining us tonight. You know, my executive director, a good friend and an excellent educator and provider, Mr. Rami Duckworth. Any last words, and where can people find you?
Just in terms of last words, repeating what we've said, please share the information that's out there. The way that we've done things before isn't good enough. Just because you have been lucky enough not to be involved in a major traffic incident that's injured responders, really the clock is just ticking on it, and there's a lot of simple things that you can do. Some of them do take a lot of resources, but not all of them do. As far as contacting me, I'm available on Twitter at Rom Duck and at Rescue Digest, and people can contact me through the website rescuedigest.com.
Excellent, Rom. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Mr. Rob Rahab, Mr. New York, New Jersey, out there in the east over there. You know, any last words, and where can people find you?
Thanks, Kyle, for having me on. I really appreciate it. And, yeah, the last words are that both as students and as instructors, we need to take a deeper look at what we're doing here with TIMS, the TIMS network, the first, responder safety network. All that has a lot of good information, great information, not good information, great information that is readily available and is easily digestible in any kind of lecture format. So we need to get that out there. They can reach me at rob@fact.com, Please check out the website, SAC.com, for simulation training and curriculum development. And you can follow me along at First Safety on Twitter. So feel free to reach out.
Excellent.
And thank you again for having me.
Thank you, Rob, for joining us. My friend from out west there, Mr. Doug Godomsky. Any last words, and where can people find you?
Last words, yeah, be safe out there. Keep your eyes open. No matter how safe you think you are, you're not safe enough. And let's see, find me. You can, well, the easy way, just Google UNM EMS Academy, and you'll find our website and a link there. But otherwise, find me on Twitter, ABQ Medic, and that's about it. I'm, you know, 9 to 5 here, Monday through Friday, and unfortunately, quite a bit beyond that, but we're here.
Excellent. Thank you, Doug, for joining us. And from the TIM Network, a partner that we're starting to work with, I think this is going to be a great relationship. I've learned a lot tonight. Mr. Eric Renzel. Eric, any last words? And then where can people find you?
First, just a big shout-out thanks to you, Kyle, and to the rest of the panel. I really appreciated and enjoyed the conversation, the dialogue that we started here tonight. I think you're right, Kyle. I think this is hopefully the beginning of what will be a successful partnership for sure. Check out timnetwork.org. You can find us on Facebook at the National Traffic Incident Management Coalition and on Twitter at the TIM Network as well. As far as contacting me individually, you can go to email me at erensel, E-R-E-N-S-E-L, at gfnet.com, or you can get that also on timnetwork.org. I do also just want to mention that belonging to the TIM Network is free. You can log on to timnetwork.org and fill out the free application, and we try to control how we contact you, and only in relevant situations or scheduled contacts, so you don't have to worry about any kind of spam list or anything like that. We're pretty organized with that. So, again, Kyle, just thanks for the opportunity to come and be a part of this, and I really enjoyed it.
Now, of course, Eric, I can't let you go and without talking about your alter ego, Mr. Tim Sherswell.
Yes, of course. So, you know, when we were launching the TIM Network, we were trying to develop a way to kind of get some attention, and we kind of took the Smokey the Bear kind of approach, and that's how Tim Sherswell was born, because, you know, traffic incident management above all, to get responder safety, to get quick clearance, to get interoperable communications, it takes people who are willing to check their egos at the door and share well. And so Tim shares well. He can be seen in lots of many places, including in the photo gallery on timnetwork.org.
I have come across his portrait. And, of course, he is also the host of the Tim Chats.
Yes, that's right. He is, Kyle. We've launched quarterly webinars and monthly Tim Chats, and you can stop by every second Thursday on Twitter and check the responder for the topic of the month and have a chat with Tim.
And that's going to be hashtag Tim Chats.
Correct, that's right.
And folks, you know, we did one. It's actually a really interesting a way of doing. It's a podcast without podcasting. It's essentially questions back and forth. They're all answered on Twitter, and you can interact with the Twitterer. Is that even a word? Twitterer, tweeter.
Tweeter.
I don't know. Twitter. You know, on that, and it's really a unique concept. It's kind of nice because you can be sitting in a meeting, and attending a Tim's chat or class. Shh, Doug, don't say anything. So that's what your students are doing when they're not paying attention. They're in the Tim chat.
Absolutely, Kyle. We found that our membership, which is about 2,500, by the way, they like that. They like the fact that you can get some professional involvement, but not totally take your attention away from, you know, whatever you happen to be working on.
So thank you again, Eric, for joining us. You know, folks, You know, the thing is, you know, this discussion's not over. We need to expand it. We need to get it out there. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of training out there. And I'm embarrassed that I wasn't even aware of that federal training. And we're going to get information out on that, put that on the website so you can learn about that. Because we need to stop getting hit by vehicles, folks, or even the near misses. We need to get better at managing the roadways. You know, construction companies have been doing this for years, and they've been perfecting it, you know, making it better. And we can learn from them. We have to do best practices. We got to go beyond just what we know in our area. We have to share well, as Eric was saying, and check the ego at the door. I think we need to study a lot more. We need to study, you know, what people know, what people don't know. It's essentially we need to do a needs assessment on that and go from there and build our education on that. And why aren't we able to do this? Is it a fact of just a lack of knowledge? Is it a lack of appreciation? Or is it a lack of funding? So we need to start looking at that and start looking for ways to be able to improve how we operate on roadways, you know, for that. And, you know, again, you know, it's really interesting that Eric started off the podcast talking about Europe, because a lot of you know that I worked with the EMS Safety Foundation and Dr. Nadine Levick, and we go over to Europe every spring to Rentmobile to look at safety innovations in terms of vehicle construction. And folks, and I've seen some of the ways that they manage roadways over there, and it's much more intense than what we do here. And their idea of safety is beyond what it is, you know, in this area. We've got to change our mindset. We've got to change our culture. And that when we get into some of these events and some of these roadways, if we need to look at traffic incident management, we need to look at every single motor vehicle crash, but just to the extent will be based on the roadway and the incident involved. But folks, that's got to take priority over patient care. You know, all too often we want to go running to the side of the patient, we want to go running to the side of the car, but you have to establish a safe working area. You need a safe work zone before, because if you get injured, if you get struck, you're not going to be any use. And even on top of that, a lot of you can appreciate this. If you're on a roadway and there's no traffic incident management, you're not paying full attention to that patient, because if you are aware of your safety, you're watching cars pass by you. So your attention is you're multitasking, and we all know that multitasking is not effective. You can't do it. We've proven that. It's been shown in numerous studies that multitasking doesn't really work when you're using the same, you know, auditory and visual senses on that. So something is going to give eventually, whether it be the patient care or your safety. So, you know, this is just the beginning, you know, of our discussion. This is just the beginning of our education. We need to get this out there. Go over to timnetwork.org. You know, become a member. It is free. Just like Eric says, you don't get a lot of emails from them. You don't get a lot of contact, which is it's nice, because you don't get, you know, it doesn't hit your spam folder. But what they do send out is useful and beneficial to you on those Tim chats. And I think we need to expand the discussion at the education level. You know, we were established by, you know, the Department of Transportation, you know, and NHTSA, National Highway Safety Administration, and. We don't spend enough, you know, here it is, these are the people that have established what we do, but yet they don't talk much about our safety at the scenes. So I think we need to kind of force, you know, the uppers on this. And that's where my goal with the Do You Know Tim and I Know Tim initiatives is it's not meant for the upper echelons. It's not meant for, you know, the chiefs. It's the boots on the ground, because it's got to be from a bottoms-up perspective saying, hey, chief, we're not safe. We need to improve things. Because the chief and stuff, they can do all their orders and stomp up and down all they want. If it doesn't come from the bottom side, if they don't appreciate it, it's going to be hard to establish. So I really want to thank, you know, Doug, Rami, Rob, and especially Eric for joining me tonight. My name is Kyle David Bates. You can find me here at Kyle David Bates at FirstViewMoments.com. You can find me on Twitter at Kyle, at ImageMedic. Wow, this has been a rough one tonight. At ImageMedic, I'm out of practice. As well as you can find at First Few Moments on Twitter as well. Go ahead over to our website. You can find our, you know, and like our Facebook page as well. So for my panel and myself, folks, have a good night, and please stay safe out there.